You're on deck.
Hey, I'm always ready.
All right. Darren Mudd from Mudd Wealth Management joining, making his monthly sojourn with us to help us navigate those rocky shoals of finance. Tax day's coming.
It's coming very soon. It's right around the corner. Yes.
It's been a month now.
And Jeff and I
see Jeff sweating here. He's got sweat beads going down his face.
Uh-oh.
I have collected all my tax documents.
Yeah, we've got
and
all
And that's
ours.
About as far as I've gotten. That's
impressive. Cool. Yeah.
I got them all together. At some point, I need to do something with them.
Yes.
We have until April 15th, though, so we got a little time. Now, some people, you know, they've got their taxes done, and they had them done for a month and a half, and we all sneer at them. But for the rest of us, you know, as we're getting ready, people maybe in the midst of doing taxes, like, oh, that's my project this weekend. Advice, tips, things that we should remember when we're doing taxes. I know we got some tax changes and laws. There's lots to talk about.
Yes.
People are getting less in their returns and blah, blah, blah. What's new that we kind of maybe need to know about with the changes in tax law this year?
Yeah, you know, probably the biggest thing that we're hearing is that people are getting lower refunds than they have in the past. In fact, I know a lot of people that, you know, they're paying for the first time in a long time, and it's not that their taxes have gone up. It's that, you know, when the taxes were adjusted last year in 2018, it just meant that they were getting a much bigger take-home pay than what they otherwise would have. And so, you know, a lot of people probably noticed at least a little bit of a bump in their paycheck about this time last year. But the reality is what happened is you know, just the way the holding tables worked out, it just means people were taking home more than they normally would have, which means that, you know, there's not as much left for that refund, or in many cases people got too much, you know, in their paycheck and they still owe a little bit. So, you know, it's a good time to then reflect, well, do I need to adjust my withholding for next year? Now, some people operate under the philosophy that that's great, you know, I don't want the government holding my money for a year, you know, only to get a big refund.
Yeah.
Right. But for other people, that's a kind of a discipline of saving, you know, hey, if I do that and then, you know, get a big refund, then it's kind of a way to hold my feet to the fire to save, and then I can use that chunk of money for a vacation or pay off something or to use it for a big expense. And so, you know, there are some people that are really, you know, adamant that it's wrong to let the government hold your money. I don't fall into that camp. I think, hey, if you prefer to get a big refund, that's great too. That, you know, the interest you're going to make on a couple $1,000s for a year isn't all that much anyway. So, but the reality is it's a good time to take a look and maybe adjust your withholding, you know, or just, you know, again, plan otherwise. If you're not getting a refund that you normally expected, it's a good time to take a look at that. The other thing, you know, there's still, you know, you have time left if you want to make an IRA contribution for last year. For those that are eligible for the tax deduction, you can still do that. Or a Roth IRA, you wouldn't get a tax deduction, but, you know, it has tax advantages moving forward. And then the other thing that maybe some people don't realize is you can still make an HSA contribution. So if you have an HSA plan along with your health insurance, you can make that, and that is still deductible for last year. So that's another way to reduce your tax bill for last year, is to make an HSA deduction. And even if you have, let's say you don't necessarily have a lot of cash sitting around for that, but maybe you have medical bills you paid last year, you can put the money in and turn around and reimburse yourself for those medical bills. And so, you know, even if you don't have a lot of extra cash laying around where you can part with it for a longer period of time, you know, you can make it a fairly quick turnaround and get that tax deduction. And so those are some of the things people should be looking at. Even if you don't have the HSA set up, hey, you've still got time to set it up and get it, you know, make your contribution for last year.
So, you know, I think the big thing to remember, especially for people like us, our tax return doesn't change a whole lot, hasn't changed a whole lot for the last several years. We haven't had any kind of major life changes, so it's looked pretty similar. For people in that position, you may see it look a little different this year in terms of the amounts and things, just because of the tax changes.
Definitely. And you know, another big thing is there's going to be a lot fewer people that are itemizing deductions. So I believe I've seen a number of 58% of the people that were filing Schedule A deductions before will no longer be using a Schedule A, because the standard deduction doubled. And so for most people, that standard deduction is going to be more valuable than itemizing their deductions. So this is another great opportunity to look at, you know, how we handle those things that maybe otherwise would have been deducted on our Schedule A. So in many cases, that's mortgage interest. And a lot of people were slow to pay down mortgage debt because there was some value to that deduction. But in many cases now, that doesn't have value if they're not able to use that deduction. So it's a great way to maybe accelerate, or a great time to maybe accelerate some mortgage pay down. Also to look at charitable giving and how do we leverage our charitable giving strategies to get the greatest tax benefit. So for a lot of our clients, that means using something called a donor advised fund and kind of doing an every other year thing where they donate real heavy in 1 year to take advantage of their itemized deductions. And then that money, then they can pay out from the donor advised fund over the next year as well. And so there's some great strategies people can use to still get tax deductions where, you know, maybe they wouldn't if they just kept giving the way they normally did.
And definitely seen here at ESFM, this has been our toughest winter financially as long as I can remember. And I'm guessing that has a part to play in it, and heard from other nonprofits as well, and different types of nonprofits, all of it seen the effects of this change.
I think it's that. I think it's also, you know, there's been so much talk the last few months about recession. You know, all of a sudden, you know, we had a great year in the economy last year. The third quarter was awesome. But then I don't think I've ever seen it where all of a sudden it seemed like within a couple of weeks, you know, there was all this talk in the media about a potential recession. And the reality is we're not anywhere close to a recession. And so I think that really created a lot of fear as we went through the winter months. I think people were holding on to their funds a little bit more. But I believe both of those certainly have some impact.
Anything in the news right now that could affect things financially, either good or bad?
Yeah, you know, the economic news has been real wishy-washy, which is actually pretty normal for the first quarter. You have a lot of weather-related impact. You know, right now it seems that the Federal Reserve is, you know, the inflation numbers have been really tame, so it kind of, you know, is good because that will keep them on the sidelines, and hopefully they won't raise rates anytime soon. You know, there seems to be some slight progress in the whole trade situation. So, you know, the initial deadline has been extended with China, and, you know, based on what we're hearing, I think that there's a pretty high probability that a deal, a very favorable deal for everybody. I mean, because a good trade deal is good for both sides, right?
Right.
You know, you don't want a one-sided trade deal. That's not right. And so, you know, I think it will be, you know, a deal will happen that will be beneficial for both sides. And that will be great, not just for the U.S. and China, but really for the entire global economy, because you have the two biggest players at work here. And it's kind of like if mom and dad are fighting, nobody's happy in the family, right? But so if the U.S. and China can come to terms, it's really going to be great for the whole world.
All right, let's talk about something that never gets talked about anymore, but, you know, is I think a huge issue and something we're going to have to deal with eventually, and that is the national debt, because we continue to spend money. We're approaching again $1 trillion deficits, and it just seems to me you can't keep doing this. Eventually, this is going to catch up to us, and when it does, I just got a feeling it's going to be bad. And so, I mean, is there anybody at all in Washington going, hey, dummies, we might want to stop spending all this money?
There are a few, and they very quickly get drowned out. Well, I put it, you know, on the campaign trail, there seems to be a lot. But then when they get to Washington, all of a sudden, you know, those cries seem to diminish. And so it's frustrating to watch because, I mean, one, it's a very, you know, because it's a political process, when you talk about balancing the budget or reigning in debt, ultimately, that means you're cutting spending from somebody. And so those people don't like that, and there's pain. And so, you know, we're seeing some great examples. You know, we've seen countries like, you know, in Europe, like Greece and Italy, who are experiencing now the ramifications of having out of control debt loads. And so at some point that does become a reality. You know, the pain happens there. We see other countries like Japan. I mean, Japan makes our debt look like child's play. I mean, their debt is so far beyond it, yet it doesn't seem to be having an impact yet. So the reality is, yes, at some point it's going to come back and bite us. I think that point is quite a ways down the road, especially as long as the U.S. remains the dominant economy. And again, if we look to Japan's example and the fact that, I mean, their debt is, you know, 200% of their GDP, yet they still have lower interest rates than we do. So, you know, we look at it, you know, from an economic perspective, you're like, this defies so many different, you know, economic laws, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. But the reality is that debt impedes future economic growth. So what you've seen with Japan is their economy has been in and out of recession perpetually for the last 15 or 20 years. Part of that is demographic, but again, you know, they're all intertwined. But because they have that massive debt load, that means they don't have a lot of dry fuel for economic growth. And so we're basically pulling future economic growth into today when we borrow. And that means that future economic growth is going to be limited.
And probably a question that always affects us on a daily basis, gas prices at their highest they've been in quite some time. What's going on right now?
Yeah, you know, we've seen a little bit of a snapback in oil. OPEC has constrained their production a little bit. You know, we've seen a little bit of a mini repeat of what we saw back in 2016, where, you know, over the last year, U.S. oil production has really gone up dramatically. And so that, you know, once again has flooded the market with oil. And that's why we saw oil prices and gas prices come down. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of rebound of that. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. I think it's, you know, part of it's just headlines. You've got some oil OPEC trying to constrain supply. You've got disruption in Venezuela with the things going on down there. Yeah, you've got, you know, of course, things with Iran aren't very friendly right now. And so you've got a few things going on. But the reality is the world is flush with oil. We don't have, you know, the concerns about running out of oil like, you know, like we were hearing 10 or 15 years ago. Especially here in the U.S., we have tremendous, tremendous supplies. And the biggest constraints are getting it, you know, from point A to point B. It's in many cases the transportation and the refining. And so, you know, I think we're, you know, it's probably a temporary blip, although, you know, still, you know, even you know, I noticed gas prices were a little closer to 250 depending on where you were. That's still great, right, compared to where we were a couple years ago when we were pushing $4. So, you know, I think, you know, we'll probably stay in that $2 to $3 range, probably even more towards the lower half of that for most of the year. And because I just don't, you know, I mean, at this point, you know, there's still so much supply out there. And even if OPEC, you know, constrains their supply, they still have it available. It's not that they don't have it available. It's just they're artificially,
you know, there's a limit to how much sugar can constrain, because that's the money they're not getting.
Correct.
You know,
well, I mean, because
at some point they got to sell the oil.
Right. And they're struggling because, you know, they were living large on $100 oil a few years ago. And now all of a sudden at $50 or $60 a barrel, they're struggling. And so that's why you're seeing the OPEC countries, they're not really abiding by their agreements. You know, they make an agreement with a wink and a nod, and then they just kind of ignore it and keep selling oil because their economy depends on it. Their governments depend on it. And so, you know, we're seeing them have less and less control and ability to keep prices where they want them.
Yeah, it's not like in the 70s when they could really drive oil prices.
Correct. Correct.
There's too much supply elsewhere. We're talking with Darren Munn from Munn Wealth Management. And, of course, Munn Wealth Management, a sponsor of the Prayer Closet that you hear every day. And we do appreciate your sponsorship of that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's our pleasure.
If folks want to find out more information about Munn Wealth Management, how can they do so?
We're easy to find at munnwealth.com, or our phone number is 419-794-0536.
Oh, and I almost forgot. We also ask you to come and do a biblical view of money. We got so caught up in talking about gas and stuff.
Yeah.
We always want to get a biblical perspective on finances. And so what do you have for us this week?
Well, I think I'm going to throw a little curveball in here, because I was looking at Hebrews 13 and I was looking at verses 15 and 16, which are really referring to money. It's talking about making a sacrifice of praise in verse 15. And then verse 16 says, "And do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." So we see that by sharing and doing good to others, that's also a sacrifice of praise. But then I just happen to read verse 17. And I'm sure I've read it many times before, but it's jumped out at me today for whatever reason. It really doesn't have anything to do with money, but I just, for whatever reason, I wanted to talk about it today. It says, "Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy, not a burden, for that would be of no benefit to you." Now, to me, that's important. And I'm guessing, Tommy, you know, you're a pastor. Mm-hmm. Jeff, you're a leader. You know, as leaders, there are so many people, and I think this is very prevalent in the church among Christians. We become very critical of our leaders. And more often than not, you know, leaders become overwhelmed by all the negativity and the criticism that the people under their leadership are constantly, you know, it's like as Christians, many times we feel it's our responsibility to correct every little thing that we see wrong. And I can tell you as a leader, it's exhausting. And I don't ever, you know, I think that's why this jumped out at me, because I know I've talked to other leaders recently, and I know this is a perpetual issue. So I just wanted to encourage people maybe dwell on this verse, Hebrews 13, verse 7. You know, before you maybe level some criticism or address things with your leader, maybe read this and dwell on it, pray about it. But I would also encourage you, try to, you know, be more positive, you know, and understand that our leaders are under the authority of God. It's not our responsibility to tell our leaders what to do. God's put them there for a reason. Have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account to God. They're ultimately, our leaders are responsible to God and not to each of us. God is the one that will ultimately, you know, deal with them. And so I just want to encourage people, you know, our leaders, they're working hard. You know, think of your pastors, think of your ministry leaders. It is exhausting when people always are coming complaining and wanting things to be fixed. And our leaders are not going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. But let's maybe be a little bit more encouraging and look for the positive things that our leaders are doing. Let's, you know, this month, you know, even right now, pull out your phone, text, you know, those leaders in your life and encourage them. Tell them the things that you see that they're doing right, or even that you're praying for them and that you support them and that you have confidence in their leadership and you're submitting to their authority. That's what the Bible says to do. So I just encourage us, let's take that to heart, read Hebrews 13, verse 17, and let's do what it says.
Well, that's, I can see financial impact too, because if you invest yourself to say, you know, at my work, I'm going to do what I can to support my boss and help my boss, you're going to become a much more valuable employee in that place.
Absolutely. And even with a lot of that criticism comes for how finances are handled, you know, whether it's in a church or and so again, God's put people in position to deal with those types of things. And again, they may or may not do it the way we want it done, but that's, you know, that's between them and God in many cases, or the board, you know, whoever is directly overseeing it. Right. You know, it's not for, you know, that's why, you know, I know in our church we have a deacon board, you know, they're ultimately responsible to, you know, to do that, not, you know, the other hundred, you know, however many hundred people are sitting in the pews. It's not our job, you know, to tell pastor each and every week, you know, how he should be doing his job. And so, yes, they're definitely application to finances, but it's so much more than that. And our encouragement, our prayer for those in leadership roles, whether in work, whether in ministry, whether in church, is so crucial. And so many leaders get burned out because they don't have that. And all they hear is the negative. I encourage you to focus on the positive and really support those leaders, because we need them.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely need them.
Yep. Good word for us, Darren. Thanks so much. We always appreciate you.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.